Welcome back to the podcast. This is season three, and today we're sponsored by Rob and myself. We're a little bit early on the game. We've not got sponsors sorted yet, but we're ploughing on anyway.
Firstly, it's mostly you.
It's mostly, yeah. Sponsored by my bank balance. We're sponsored by Studio Access today. We'll go into that later on. But here's what we've got in store for you today. We're going to talk about the future of the podcast, how it's going to be changing, what we're going to be doing differently, taking on your feedback. We're going to talk about some game-changing camera upgrades and updates and some equipment we're buying at the studio. We're going to touch on the fact that I've not done a photo shoot for money in 6 months, but we'll get to that in a bit. There's a real good reason for that as well. We're going to talk about lighting upgrades we're making, the Adobe vs. Capture One controversy I caused last week, the American Chinese situation and the controversy I caused there last week, and we're going to talk about some ad campaigns we've recently shot, amongst a heap of other stuff. But because it's been a while since we've done a podcast, we'll have a bit of a catch up first, because, well, I say it's been a while, we filmed this last week and we have an issue that one of the cameras was out of focus, and we think it's the lens that's the problem, but we're going to test that. We also have issues. We've got loads of issues with kit. We'll talk you through how we fix said issues as we go, I suppose.
I mean, this is real life, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes stuff actually happens.
Stuff does go wrong. We've had a lot of that recently in the studio. There's been a lot of gear, battery, I think is the best way to put it. But yeah, what have you been up to, Rob, since our last podcast of what, 2 months ago?
Yeah.
Maybe 3 months since we filmed it.
Yeah, I mean, God, it's been a while. A whole bunch of stuff, really. We've both had birthdays.
We both had birthdays.
So we both had another successful trip around the sun.
Yep, made it.
I had my birthday weekend in Whitby.
Yes.
Which, first time I've ever been there. So shout out to the Whitby Massive. Absolutely magical place.
Yeah, it's good. It's nice. The UK's nice. There's lots of nice places here.
Yeah. I mean, I was particularly fond of this. I mean, it's my first time there. Like, it was a bittersweet thing because, as you know, I had to say goodbye to the love of my life. Nothing but love and respect for the woman. So this is real life. We're real people. That's your real lives behind all the facade of the thing. But I've had some good news on the independent film front.
Nice.
Drown the Silence, that I worked on with the amazing Eve Harding, has now got a premiere at Broadway in Birmingham in May.
Perfect.
Which is incredible. And also Dead Bar, which I keep repping on the reg. They've got their premiere in Amsterdam in June.
I've never seen anything I've shot on a big screen. You've seen your work on big screen before, haven't you?
Yeah. No, I was fangirling. Like,
yeah, it's like, I can imagine it's
like,
amazing.
So hard, fangirling, like, as if. I mean, the first thing, now there's context here.
Yep.
2016, where they put on an event in Leicester to basically fund doctors working in war zones, which, like, what an admirable charity, right? I mean,
yeah.
Those guys are, like, absolute heroes. And I offered to shoot it for free because what a great charity. And they put a raffle on. Now, you had people like, you know Jesse Wright.
I know Jesse Wright.
And you know how good Jesse Wright is.
I do indeed.
And they're like, oh, we'll do a gig in your house, at your whatever. We'll just raffle off a gig. And there wasn't much activity on the older purse strings.
Yeah, everyone's skint, aren't they, at the moment?
I know. So, me being me, I was like, hold my pint.
Yeah.
Like, rocked up, I'm like, right, guys, you'll know who I am or what I do. Photo or video shoot, let's go. Now, Carol Leeming, who you've met.
I do know Carol.
Right. Let's just say a very determined woman. That's the only way I can describe this. So, Lon and Celia, a.k.a. Elysian,
yep. As
you know, good friends of mine, were like, yeah, we'll do this. And Carol was like, mine. And Carol was like, I'm having him. That's just the end of it. And the most terrifying words I've heard from anyone, bearing in mind I've been locked in cages with 18 stone men.
Yep.
And she said, I don't know what I'm going to do with you. But I'm like, well, just to be clear, I'm only offering my professional services. Yeah. So on the back of that, Carol was writing a book called The Declamation of Corlai, a book of poetry. And she basically used a video that we shot to promote the launch of the book.
Oh, nice.
And that was all done at the Phoenix. And that was the first time I'd ever seen anything of mine on the big screen. I was like,
cool. I can only imagine how good it looks on a big screen. I don't think, like, I mean, I've seen mine on digital billboards, but that's not the same as it. That's like a pixelated mess. It's not the same as a... It's not the first time you see work on a billboard or like as a proper print, like a proper big...
No, but it's like, I mean... as you know, I mean, I'd owned a camera, I think, about three years at this point.
Yeah.
And they did a Q&A afterwards because Carol being Carol, like milking the promo for all it was worth. And the people are like, oh, well, I see there's a lot of Germanic influence. I'm like, whatever that is, quickly Google Germanic influence. Didn't have a clue. I just wanted to make it look dark and moody and cool. I've got no idea what you're talking about.
Looks
but
good.
I've got to pretend that I'm a proper filmmaker at this point.
Yeah.
And then since then, I have done a bit of that. The Phoenix, again, amazing institution.
Yeah, we use that a lot.
Where they do a thing, well, they've done a thing called Show and Tell, where, again, they give independent filmmakers a chance to, again, have their work screened on the big thing and actually do a Q&A with, again, a quite select audience of people who are actual, you know, film enthusiasts. So I've got to do a couple of times. I'm still not polished at it. I mean, you know, as anyone that's ever watched this podcast will know, I'm not good in front of people. But, yeah, I've done it a few times now, but like, again, Broadway in Birmingham, that's like a level up for me.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. That's
and
a big
like, an international premiere, like, mate.
Yeah, like,
I'm all up in that. So,
nice stuff.
So that's been me. What have you been up to, Scott?
What have I been up to? Well, we did the birthday. We did the 39th birthday, 40th year on the planet now. Did my midlife crisis, obviously got the car.
It wasn't a convertible Porsche, though, was it?
No.
It is a convertible.
It is convertible.
It's just not a Porsche.
We've got a little 97 MX-5 in red with the poppy-up headlights.
Vintage, classic.
The only reason I bought it was the poppy-up headlights, let's be honest. So I've been learning how to build car because I bought it not working. intentionally.
In fairness, you have been on a bit of a journey. Like, you went from never owning a car.
Yep.
So, you know, man don't need no car, don't know anything about cars, to all of a sudden... When you bought the Mercedes,
yeah,
absolutely deep dived and nerded out on every nut and bolt of that thing, which was necessary.
It was
more so now with the Mazda.
Yes, yes. I mean, I managed to get the Mazda working, which is good. There was a few mistakes I made, which we've rectified quite quickly. But yeah, got it all up and running, and it's working, and it's driving nicely. But it's interesting. So I have an issue of hyperfocus, which is how I ended up in this job. So I got a camera and I hyper-focused. I hyper-focused photography so hard. My first camera was a Bronica ETR-S 645, which is a medium format 645 camera. And I bought it because I couldn't afford a full frame digital. And I knew, because I hyper-focused, that sensor size matters. And I bought that camera for £200, still got it in my barometer thing, cabinet.
Yeah.
Chamber.
It looks like a fridge. But
it looks like a fridge. It's not a fridge. My camera fridge. Still got it. I'd never part with that camera. And I nerded out so hard that even today, I can look at a scene, imagine a film stock, work out where in the zone system I'm exposing it, and then think about my development process and print process and know what it's going to look like. That's how hard I hyperfocus. I did the same with lighting, to the point where you see me on set.
Mm.
I place a light and it looks exactly how it should look. There's no messing around.
With minimal finessing, usually speaking.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, put it there on 7.8. And I'm like, yep, that'll be it. But on the flip side, I never hyper-focus on Photoshop. So as you know, can't use it at all.
Well, I mean, fortunately, that keeps me with the roof over my head.
Yeah.
So,
so I do hyper-focus and stuff to the point where I'm not allowed hobbies, because every hobby I have becomes a business. So I started making a couple of videos for fun. Now I have a YouTube business, an entire separate business to my photography with an educational platform, because I hyper-focused the quickest and most efficient way to teach people what I know.
You see, like, I mean, I can relate to it a much lesser extent. I mean, as you know, I mean, I bought a camera because I didn't have one.
Yep.
And then it just changed my life. I mean, prior to that, and again, I also happen to know that you do play guitar, don't you? I can play guitar. You can play guitar, which is super annoying, because I got given a 1973 Les Paul.
Yeah,
by
nice.
Someone. It'd been buried in someone's garage for 30 years. You know, the typical barn find
guitar.
And they were like, can you fix it up? Because you know about electrics and stuff, because obviously been a hi-fi nerd my whole life. I'm like, well, I've never played with guitar, but I understand the mechanics of it. So let's get it done. Got it all fixed up nice, drained it up, cleaned it. Man, there was nasty dirt on that.
I can imagine. Like,
honestly, it was grim. Got it all fixed up, played like an absolute dream. I mean, whopped it through an amp and I'm like, oh, this sounds nice. And then go back to the guy and he's like, what are you? I said, about this much. He goes, just have the guitar, mate.
Nice.
I'm like, oh, okay. I thought, well, now I've got gifted this thing. Well, let's start to play it. Now, for anybody out there that actually plays guitar and does this kind of stuff well, after 3 months of, shall we say, irregular noodling, unbelievably, I was not a virtuoso. But I know I'm limited in some way, shape or form. But that didn't connect with me. But like, I'm like, nah. And then again, a significant birthday rolled around, bought a camera. And within 5 minutes, I was getting some reasonable results out of it.
I mean, photography is nice. I mean, in my defense for learning the guitar very quickly, I was a grade 8 violinist as a child.
All right.
So I do have like a nice understanding of like instruments.
Yeah, I had none of that.
And yeah, it does make it a lot easier. Like if I want to learn piano, I'm like, oh, I'll go and learn piano because I understand the theory behind it.
Yeah, which like, helps. I mean, I didn't have any of that. And more importantly, like, you know, I've always been like, live music brought me to everything. That's kind of what brought me to your presence and everything else. But the people that I know that I admire as guitarists, and, you know, again, a lot of these people are like really good friends of mine now. Like, I'd probably say 80% of my friendship circle are musicians. It's probably about right.
80% of mine are animals, but...
but, like, oh, you're great. How long have you been playing? 10 years, 15 years, 20 years? I'm like, man, you got to put in work if you want to get good at this.
Well, it's interesting. So I have a lot of photographers going like, oh, I need to do this, 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 and this, and, you know, I need to make money and all the rest of it. And, like, they've been doing it for 2 years. Mm. Now, so I've worked with a few photographers, obviously, as one-to-one things. The ones who are successful have no interest in cameras, who get there quickly. Anyone interested in cameras, it takes them years. And I'm one of those people. I started in 2009. I reckon 2011 was the first time I filed a tax return as a self-employed person. I reckon 2013 was the first time I made money.
Which is the year we met.
Yep. And then I reckon 2018 was the first year I made proper money, like significant money. Up until that point, I was just struggling to get by.
Mm.
You know, my first few years, I didn't pay tax, not because I was avoiding it. I didn't make enough to pay tax.
Yeah, I didn't hit the 4.5 grand threshold to actually pay any.
What's the threshold? Is it 12,500 now? It's probably like 8.5 back then. I think it was. I mean, I did my tax returns, obviously, but like, I didn't actually make enough money. Even some years, the gross wasn't enough to pay tax on. Whereas now, sadly, my tax bills are substantial and painful.
Well, it's, you know, you're at the point where you pay more in tax than you used to earn, you know?
Yes, do you know, I think it was probably around 2017, 2018, when my tax bill started getting bigger than my earnings were the previous year on year.
Right, so I'm trying to do the timeline here of when, because a lesser known fact is that I took on your old studio when you left it.
So I left that studio at 2016 because part of the Wi-Fi password here is 2016 on it, because it helps me remember when I have to do stuff for business rates what year we moved into the studio in. So it's 2016 I moved in here.
Yeah, so, and again, you went...
Yeah, from moving in here in 2016, my career took off quite quickly. I mean, as I say that, it's not because of an overnight success. There was a...
No, there was graft.
There was 7 years of graft before then to get to that point. But it was definitely an uptake. We moved in here with Paul and DWC at the time.
Yeah. Dangerous Dave.
Dangerous Dave. We parted ways, I think, within 6 months when I realised there was a difference in work ethic and that I wanted to move faster.
Yeah. I mean, I've always known you to be quite driven.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, whether it's hyper-focus, whatever, but you kind of knew where you wanted to be.
Yes.
And I do love the other two gentlemen, but they're a bit more lackadaisical about that particular direction.
Yeah, I mean, Paul and I get on really well. I don't really speak to Dave anymore. I don't know if it's like it is partly a falling out on that. There's definitely some bad blood due to it.
Well, Paul's your go-to assistant, isn't he?
Paul's my go-to man. Paul's just like, yeah, mate, I understand. Like,
again, it's almost as long as I've known him. Like, I remember that shoot you did for Premier Drums where I had like 23 lights.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, I'll just get Paul in and sort that out.
So that job there was my first ever big ad campaign for a billboard. And like the level of bullshit I pulled off to get that job. I was like, yeah, come to my studio. I'll send you the address. Now, I had a manager at the time because I was shooting mostly location stuff called Angie. And lovely lady.
I remember Angie.
Yeah, great lady. Did we part on good terms? Maybe not.
I think so.
No, we have been out since, actually. Yes, we did. It was many years ago, this was. I was a bit of a dick back then. And I was like, yeah, come to my studio, we'll send you the address. Angie, I need a studio. And then she happened to know Pugsy, who owns the Orange Tree brand. Pugsy was like, we've got a room.
One of the three directors.
We've got a room you can use. I was like, brilliant, I'll take it on as a lease. And I did it for something. It was something brilliant, like 250 quid a month. And I had to do two photo shoots for the brand. It was nuts.
It was actually less than that.
Was it?
Because I took over it, so I know how little.
How much was it?
$150 a month for two shoots.
My water bill's more than that for the coffee.
Honestly, like...
My coffee bill's more than that.
When I took it on, I'm like, why am I paying for a house? Why don't I just live here?
Because you had the kitchen.
You had the shower.
Yeah.
You were fully set up. I mean, we had Unstable down the corridor at the top. I had Unstable down the corridor.
Yeah, I did for a bit there as well.
And... Again, I got given a day's... Obviously, the Orange Street Group, or Garbin Enterprises, sold up while, quote-unquote, it was their choice to do so.
Yeah.
And,
rather quickly.
Just before I was about to start filming my first short film, I got the phone call from the landlord, who I'd never spoken to because they sold it on to somebody else.
Yeah.
And they were like, hi, I don't know if you've got anything expensive in here. Like, if anyone knows anything about this, everything's expensive.
Yeah, it's all expensive.
And they were like, well, the receiver's coming in tomorrow, so I suggest you move it. I said, if you could be out by 9 o'clock, that'd be great. I'm like,
Jesus. How much stuff did you leave?
Oh, probably a grand's worth of stuff. Because I just had literally nowhere to put it.
Yeah.
You know the massive stands and the big umbrellas and all this. I'm like, well, I've got...
My
house is still a disaster area.
Yeah, yeah.
Full of like half studio, half house. But I just had to say, well, what, you know, your philosophy, what do I use on the daily?
Yeah, yeah.
Get that out first. What do I use once in a blue moon? But that has to stay.
I think recently I've been selling loads of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You've been, getting on the bay.
Yeah, I've been getting rid of stuff, you know, making moves, as it were, selling up loads and loads of kits. There's still over there that's still going.
But there's certain things, like...
just watch your fingers on the table.
Oh, sorry.
Getting a bit tappy.
Sorry.
I have to test out the noise cancelling.
It'll be fine.
It'll be.
I mean, I remember when you had your pocket wizard, you were, listen to the click. Absolutely silent.
Yeah, I know. Did us dirty then, didn't it?
Done us dirty, man. Done us dirty. Like Dolly Track, as you know, I own a Dolly Track. I use that once in like an absolute blue moon. Now, again, referring back to Drown the Silence with Eve Harding, she was like, I'm like, we'll just do it with a gimbal and walk you back. She's no, I want that shot on a Dolly Track. Like, very specific. And what she wanted is direct. So I'm like, mate, you're the boss. I did it. And like, you know, one of those, why don't I use this more often? This looks really good.
Dolly Tracks are great. It's just a faff, though.
It's laying a faff. The tracks. It is a faff.
Getting it perfectly level.
It did, as you know, get me busted by the Birmingham Film Police using a Dolly Track. Which as if there's such a thing, but that's
no. I've had issues in Birmingham. We have to have permits to shoot there, location, especially on the canal.
Yeah, I was around that way.
Yeah,
Custard Factory and that kind of area. Like,
yeah,
they're prolific.
Yes, yeah. You got to have all your paperwork in check.
And it's like a slider. Like again, once in a blue moon, I bust a slider out, and you're looking. You're like, I love that.
Yeah.
Why don't I use it more often? Because this is easier and faster, and just 99% of the job.
Well, it's easier and faster is, I'm always like, just do it. Like, just get on with it. Like, don't wait for it to be perfect. Just crack on, do the bloody job. Like, all these people waiting for everything to be perfect. Like, you look at this podcast shot here. It's not perfect. It's good enough. There's mess in the background. Could tidy it up. I'm not going to. It's better just to get it done. We could spend ages getting everything perfect. And one of the biggest things I see holding photographers back is perfection.
Yeah, I mean, but just it's like, again, like, you say, right, what have you been doing? I spent a month on this one shot, and you're like, okay, it's not that special. And you spent a month on it.
I know.
You're just better off just carpet bombing all sorts of stuff for a month and then pick from a bigger portfolio.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we shot high volume when we're building this new portfolio we've got. Like those portraits we shot for the new portrait portfolio, did it in a weekend.
Like, nothing
was perfect.
You carpet bombed it for the weekend as well. Like,
a week off.
Was it 7 or 8 different models?
8 models a day.
Yeah.
2 days, 8 models a day, 16 models, shot the shit out of it.
I remember like doing the retouch. I'm like, there's a lot here, dude.
It is a lot. There's a lot of bad photos. Bangers, though.
It's not my place to say, but
I don't know. I don't know. But that's what we've been up to. I mean, I've just been shooting ad campaigns last week.
Yeah, you've been doing actual work this week.
Actual work last week, ad campaigns again. And then we've got 2 big ad campaigns, I think, next week. And then maybe 1 the week after. It's busy. The industry has picked up. Which is great. So I guess with the podcast, going back to what I'm supposed to be talking about before the tangents, season 3 is going to happen. We've got 3 sponsors interested. We're just finessing the details. We're just going to roll solo until we've finessed those. So there'll be 10 episodes once the sponsors are signed up and a few more up top of that, I guess. Aiming for weekly.
Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, again, I think we've explained this in previous ones, but I generally, and this isn't always the case, see you every other weekend.
Yeah, every other weekend we come in. So normally we do two of these.
We try and do two back to back.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you've got enough content to get us through to the next week.
Apart from because you're in next week as well. We'll
This is an anomaly because of family schedule.
Schedules, children, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to have fewer guests on the podcast. Everyone said they wanted guests and they wanted real photographers. You lied. You didn't.
No, they did lie because I believe it's because I bring a certain amount of amateur chic to things and a bit of relatability to the guys trying to get there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, I've always been very honest about this. Like, you know, you're a level above and a good 5 years step on from me. If I was motivated in the way that I'm not, that you are, if that kind of makes sense. So it's kind of, I suppose, Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
It's kind of.
Well, I think the problem is people think that YouTubers are photographers. And when they meet a real photographer in a chat and they're not great on camera and they're not great on interview and they're not what they want them to be, they're a bit like, oh, this person doesn't care about kit. Oh, this person's talking all about this creative stuff that I can't access. And it's not, and I've done this before. I've made mistakes before where people have said, we want this. And I've listened to people and done it.
And it bombed.
And it bombs. Yeah. It absolutely bombs. And what I need to do is stop listening to what people say and just do what I want to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's a toughie. I mean, like, it's such a difficult thing because, as you know, I can empty a room in seconds because I'm an absolute uber nerd on certain things.
Yep.
And I'm like, wow, it's no surprise I'm single.
Yeah.
Like, when you just listen back to what you've just said, you're like, yeah, that completely computes. That makes absolute sense. Right, okay, Rob, you know, check yourself out next time. But again, it's like the problem, I suppose, you have at the level you work at, like a lot of people look at you and, you know, like, oh, you know, Scott's doing well for himself. He's got this well-known brand campaign that he's just shot, da-da-da. And then people say, oh, mate, I want to do that. How do I do it? And then you tell them the actual truth.
Yeah.
And they don't want to hear it. They're like, no, I just want to hear that you met a guy and this was a thing and then you did it. We're like, no. There was like 15 years of graft, clawing and scraping my way up the ladder to get to the point where I got to do this.
I think it's also worth noting that YouTube Scott and photographer Scott are two different people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm familiar with both.
Yes, yeah, they're very different people, very different things. I am not like this on set.
No. In fairness, you're much better now.
I used to be a nightmare on set. Do you know what Paul was saying the other day? We're on this job. And it wasn't going particularly well. And he was just like, I was just waiting for you to lose your rag. And you just kept getting more and more polite. And he went, it was quite eerie.
Yeah, that's how you know it's going wrong when Scott's getting more polite as the shoot goes on.
We were so screwed at this one point. I was just going, like, it's gone wrong anyway. I was like, don't worry, guys, it's fine. Everything's going to be great. Don't worry about it. And I was like, yeah, I'm not stressed.
I remember like one of the earliest jobs we worked on was what was then the Dave Lester Comedy Festival.
Yeah, oh, God, that was a nightmare.
And do you remember the Top Gear, put comedians in Range Rovers and drive around track. And it was the slowest, dullest thing you've ever seen.
Oh, my God.
And you on the radio, is everything fine? And someone's like, yeah, everything's cool, mate. And you were like, then why are you talking?
Yeah. Like, shut up.
If there's a problem, get on comms. If there's no problem, shut up.
Yes.
Like, I don't want to hear that everything's fine. It's like, why are you even talking?
Yeah, don't speak. Yeah, I'm not like that anymore. I used to be a nightmare.
And I remember like, your eyes rolling. Like, my God, this is like the slowest and dullest thing. It's like, remember the on the Fast Show when they did the Aardman animation things? Like, have he moved his hand a tiny bit? And he was like, oh, anyone fancy a pint?
Yeah.
It was literally that, wasn't it? It was like, well, how do we make this look cool? I don't know, but we'll figure it out later.
Exactly. And it's very, like, I mean, over on Studio Access, I'm more me, the photographer, for sure. But yeah, on YouTube.
Yeah, because you get to, dare I say it, it's probably the wrong terminology, but you get to be honest on Studio Access. Because
there's a lot of pandering on YouTube. Less so on the podcast, I'd say, than on the actual videos. Because like, if you're listening to the podcast, you're interested in what we have to say. Whereas people who watch the videos, it's a mixture of people who are interested and people who found it by mistake.
Yeah, and as you've always said, and you're completely correct, people go onto YouTube and look for a quick fix.
Yes.
Like, do this one thing and earn 100 grand this year. You're like, mate, I'm clicking that.
Yeah.
Like, but you don't actually want to hear the correct answer to how you have to get into that spot.
No, exactly, exactly. And it's difficult, isn't it?
Like, and because... Studio Access, I mean, shameless plug here.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Is for the 1% that actually want to take it on another level and understand the business, and this has always been your thing, the yeah. business of photography.
Yes.
And it's not sunshine and roses. Like, there's, you know, a certain amount of slog and grind.
Yes. There's, yeah, and what we're trying to do is break them down into lots of smaller sections now. So we originally were doing like hour-long videos, and everyone was like, it's too much. And I was thinking, well, I'll cut this short. But now we're like micro-learning. So it's all in there. And
small, digestible sections.
Yeah, exactly. But nerdy. Super nerdy.
But again, for the 1% that want to do it, they will nerd out on that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think, like, it's, like you say, if I put one of those videos on YouTube, no one would watch it. Like, yeah. We spent time discussing the different constructions of softboxes and their purposes and uses and pros and cons. And I'm not talking about like, oh, is this one better than no, like nerdy stuff. Like, yeah, nerdy stuff. So that's over. I mean, I think because I've been on set all week, you can still sign up for Studio Access and get a week for free because I've not turned it off yet. So do you know, I'll leave it on for this. If you want to get a free week Studio Access, go and sign up for it. I'll pop the link below. I do need to turn that off. I'm not entirely sure how to do it, so we might have to wait for Ben to come and turn it off for me. But yeah, that's what we're doing over there. Probably film some more content today for actually. I want to film a real deep dive into Capture One for it because, and Joe, you know, this is a great segue into, I did a video comparing Adobe Lightroom to Capture One. Now, this is trying to explain to people why Capture One's better than Lightroom. Now, over on Studio Access, we'll go into this in great detail. But here's the thing for me. Even if Capture One wasn't better than Adobe Lightroom, Capture One's industry standard.
Yeah.
And so they still use it.
And that's important. So, and we've said this many times, like, there's certain things that just are industry standard, like Photoshop.
Industry standard.
As you know, I'm not Adobe's biggest fan.
Yeah.
But the jewel in the crown clearly is Photoshop.
Yeah.
There is no better software on the planet to do what that does than Photoshop.
But even if there was a better piece of software, Photoshop's
industry
standard.
You'll never get hired as a retoucher knowing to use Affinity One. You're not. Sorry, but you're not.
I find it infuriating trying to explain these things to people. I'm going to do a proper deep dive into why Capture One is actually better, because it is. And that'll be on Studio Access. We'll go through the entire workflow of it and why we use it and how we use it. But it's like, if you want to use a computer as a commercial photographer, it has to be...
A Mac.
Two main reasons. Number one... Capture One works better with Macs because you can use all of the... We'll go into that. It's better with Macs. Number two, as we found out last week, when you format a video drive to be able to work on a Windows machine, you get a file limit.
That's the thing. And I'll give you the third reason. Most importantly, yes. Dare I say it, and I hate the term, but I'm going to say it, visual creative.
Yeah.
The fact you can see the thumbnail.
Yeah.
Like, that alone...
That's worth the ticket price take for my money, Macs like, anyway.
And I can't, honestly, it drives me insane because, as you know, I dual boot between both systems. And I use Windows, it's pretty much exclusively for like CAD, like SolidWorks things like, because it's not available on Mac, it just isn't. So you have to run Windows. And every time I go on there, I'm like, my God, this is so limited.
But, and again, if you want to do CAD work,
if you're only
Windows.
I put myself in this category, if you're a CAD monkey, mate, you're on Windows and PC Master Race and all that. As you know, I'm kind of halfway on the fence because I run a Hackintosh.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can boot into either or and it's all gravy. But the experience of using it on a day-to-day, personally, I know the ripped off Linux and all that, but Mac OS actually is really nice.
I mean, it's one of those things, it's like I don't care whether it's Windows or Mac. Like, it doesn't bother me. I don't care what I use.
Now it works, and you know.
The only thing which makes me decide that I'm using Mac is because it's industry standard.
Yeah.
Like that, and I learn Mac. And do you know what? For a long time, you could get a better PC for less money. Not anymore, I don't think, but for a long time.
Yeah, you see, since the start of nerd alert here, since they've actually brought out their own processors, dare I say it, Apple computers, you would never heard me say this 8 years ago, are actual reasonably good value for money.
I mean, this laptop here cost $1,000.
Yeah.
It can edit 6K raw video.
And I defy anyone to find a better laptop for the money right now than a Mac. Now, people will say, oh, you know, this thing's 400 quid. Right. I'll see you in 10 years. As you know, my previous MacBook Pro.
Yeah, I had the same one.
Yeah, you had the same one. The 2012, the last of the Steve Jobs era. God rest his soul. I, as you know, hammered that thing. Like, I mean, we're talking...
to re-thermal paste mine.
Like, we're talking like 14, 15 hours a day.
Yeah.
For the better part of 10 years before it finally had to tap out and go over the Rainbow Bridge and go to the Big Apple thing in the sky. Now, people at the time were buying Sony Vaios and all, because that was the fancy Windows computer at the time.
I remember those.
And
yeah,
they fell apart
nice.
Within about 5 minutes.
Yeah, but they looked nice.
No, they didn't.
I like the look of it. And like
they were creaky and plasticky, and you had all the limitations of Windows.
Yeah.
Like, so honestly, like,
I remember leaving my MacBook Pro because you used to have to do proxies overnight all the time. And you'd have it on its side, so it got maximum cooling, like a fan blowing onto it. Just, I mean, like, come on, mate.
Again,
they were expensive as well.
Well, I mean, that was $2,000.
Yeah, back then, which is again, probably like $3,000 today.
Not a small amount of money. But I remember doing a video for one of the earliest ones, because, you know, I was an early adopter of the Blackmagic system.
Yeah.
You know, I was like on that from day one. And I remember doing a video for Mirror in the Moon, it was, the Radcliffe sisters.
Yeah.
And Sam Winston on the old drummage. And it was only like a 5-minute video. It took 4.5 hours to render.
Well, I remember us being on the train to Paris to do a shoot, and we were trying to render 6-second slow-mo clips on that laptop.
Yeah, that was a struggle.
And it was like taking an hour to do 6 seconds. Whereas now, this here, we'll just, you know, blitz it.
I mean, I remember doing a comparison, because, you know, you're always interested as you kind of move up the ladder.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so that 4.5 hour render, what would it do now? 3.5 minutes.
Yeah. It's
like
nuts, isn't
Moore's
it?
Law, you know, being a thing. But
so whenever anyone says, oh, what computer should I buy? I'm like, whatever
again,
Mac Pro
whatever
is available,
suits your needs is the correct answer.
Yes.
But if you're in a creative industry, if you're anything visual, photo, video, whatever, video's a tricky one, because you do need horsepower in the modern era with, you know, 6K, 8K, 12K RAW. And we'll come on to a bit of that later.
Yeah.
You do need the horsepower, and the lack of upgradability is my one. Apple got it almost right in 2019, and then immediately almost like just yoink.
Yeah. Pulled it, it's like, joke.
So you made an M series Mac Pro. Yes, we have. Brilliant. You've still got the 7 PCI slots. Yes, I do. Can I put graphics cards in? Oh, no, I don't support them.
Nope.
But you can put capture cards in. Oh. Just like, guys, come on.
I mean, to be honest, it's so few people need a pro machine nowadays.
But that, now,
whereas before,
I've said
a
this
lot
to you,
of people did.
I believe the only reason Apple made the M Series Pro is to tell you, you don't need an M-Series Pro.
Yeah.
What you want is the studio.
Studio, yeah. Which is basically, better than any Pro ever. But so, going back to the software thing. So, Mac is the computer you have to use if you want to work as a commercial photographer. It is. Capture One is the software you have to use. Now, the controversy I caused was because of picture profiles. So, and again, this is one of those things, like, if I go into every single minute detail on a YouTube video, it becomes too long and no one listens to it. I did a comparison between the two. It, as I said in the video, it is not a scientific comparison.
You're not Gerald Undone.
No, I'm not Gerald Undone, and I don't want to be Gerald Undone. I was just quickly showing people, like, when you applied the clarity in Capture One, it haloed. It's just clicked on the thing and slammed it up. Capture One clarity is substantially better than anything Adobe ever makes. It is. But the main issue is people going, oh, but use the Adobe color profile in Lightroom and use the Fuji color profile in Capture One. Now, that is right. I did do that. And that was a known thing that I did. Initially, I tried to get... So Capture One does this non-linear Fuji RAW file, which I didn't use on the video. That is the one you want to edit from. The 16-bit non-linear Fujifilm profile. It is the flattest thing you've ever seen. It's beautiful for grading. Lightroom doesn't have it. Not that particular option. It does have the film emulations and a standard Fujifilm one. I put the standard Fujifilm one on and I put it in Capture One as well, and it was quite different. And then when trying to edit from the classic Fujifilm one in Lightroom, it was a nightmare. Mm. Like, it was so wrong. Now, in my head, I assumed Fujifilm made these profiles, but obviously not. So the software companies are making them. So what I did for the test was let each software use what it default chose, assuming Adobe likes to work in the Adobe color space. and Capture One likes to work in whatever it selects as
default. It's a fair assumption, yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not, but that was the... Because if I'd done it the other way around, it'd have been miles off. And people would have gone, yeah, but you're using the profiles and they're not the same because it's different software companies that make... I was like, yes, there's always some snarky comment in there. Anyway, regardless of any of this, use Capture One. Now, the reason not to use Capture One, there is a good one. If you're a photographer and you're starting out, you've had to get Photoshop. And with Photoshop,
yeah, 100%.
You get Lightroom. Lightroom's not awful.
No, it's perfect.
You've
got to
pay for a whole additional subscription for Capture One. That's why people don't use it. It's a financial decision only. But how much money are you wasting on mirrorless cameras?
I mean, there's also knowledge.
Yeah.
Like, until I met you, I didn't know about Capture One.
No, isn't it?
Because I've been in the Adobe ecosystem before we'd even met. You know, that's kind of...
Well, it's like Adobe has great deals with the universities where they give them such heavy discounts that everyone learns Lightroom at university.
We'll come to that in a minute.
Yeah.
But, as you know, having recently interviewed some graphic designers for a client of mine, what are they teaching these kids?
God knows. That's
another rant for another day. But again, everybody knows, and again, it's been the case for the longest time that, again, when we talk about industry standards, like if you want to get into CAD, for example, there's probably three. Okay. The most common, because it's the relatively affordable and it's still expensive, is SolidWorks.
Yep.
You then also have a friend of mine who used to work for Lotus. He was like, poor man's couture. and then you've also got Pro Engineer. So you've got three options, basically, but the most widely adopted would be SolidWorks, and the skills are relatively transferable. Photoshop, there's a couple of options, but there aren't.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to be like a retoucher, whatever, honestly, the only bit of software you need to know is Photoshop.
Exactly.
You know, again, other software is available, and I'm not going to get into
that. And the thing is, other software could be better than Photoshop.
Doesn't
I don't know if it is or not, but it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Because, and here's the thing, you shoot into Capture One. In a small job that we do, for example, we shoot into Capture One, we export the TIFFs, I hand them to you, you put them in, you can right-click open in Photoshop, we do sometimes do that route, it's not ideal, you then got to remember to save the PSB separately, I need to find some PSBs that we may have misplaced, which is exactly why we don't do that, but normally we export the TIFFs, put them into Photoshop, and then work in them in there. And we save as a TIFF, a WebRes JPEG for viewing, and a PSB.
Yeah, because especially now you've moved on to the Fuji greater than full frame system. If you do one layer, it's immediately bigger than a PSD can handle. So and straight off the bat, it's a PSB, it's going to be.
And here's what clients want. They want the final TIFF, 16-bit, and they want it in RGB and CMYK. So we deliver those two. And then we also deliver them a PSB file. Now, they're not probably ever going to use it, but should there be a very last minute change that they need and we're not available,
they can do it.
They can do it. And I don't care.
I mean, as you know, I mean, like when I'm working for myself, I'm quite fast and loose on my layers.
Yeah.
I'll just get it done. I know what I want to go. And if I'm working for you, I'm like, imagine nobody's ever seen this file before. I've got to categorize this, label everything properly so everybody knows exactly what each layer is. And that takes as much time sometimes as the research does just to organize the layers so that someone else can follow what I've just done.
And sometimes we deliver a PSB so they can change the background color to 10 different colors. And even with transparency through a glass bottle, it changes through that.
Yeah, and you know, we will clip a HSL to it and, you know.
So they can, you know, export what they want from there and add new brand colors if they need to. That's quite common.
Remember Fairy? That was one, because we had to have transparency in the bottle and then be able to like basically do the full RGB rainbow of backgrounds depending on what they wanted to do. And that was a head scratch.
Yeah, I mean, so that's why we deliver those PSBs. And, you know, that is how it is. Now, if it's a big job, we don't edit it ourselves. It goes to an editing house like Tapestry or King or somewhere like that in London, probably in Soho, most of them are. And they expect a Capture One folder. They expect the TIFFs in the export file. And they expect the annotations, which Capture One lets you do, on the file so they know what to do. Mm-hmm. And they'll deliver back as PSB and TIFF.
Yeah. I mean, we'll often, at least in my case, a way more amateur version of that, is I'll put one layer above and I'll write with a pen tool what I've got to do to it.
Yes.
And then we'll get it all set up and then you'll do some actual work while I crack on with that.
Absolutely. And then, but on a big shoot, the client will be on set and they'll speak to the digi and they'll say, look, can you do this, this and this? And the digi tech will add the annotation layer in Capture One. So they've got the notes as they go, that you categorize it all. So yeah, that you know, there'll be a really in-depth video on how we use Capture One, file management, all the rest of it, because it is interesting, I think, and important to know. But regardless of anything, it's Capture One and Photoshop.
Yeah.
And Mac.
Again, if you want to do this professionally, now, as a hobbyist, semi-pro, whatever, do what you run what you brung, man.
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's all gravy. But if you're in the commercial world, when you're doing stuff for, so we say, recognised brands, there is an expectation, because this was the thing that surprised me. I mean, again, only on the back of working with you. You're never dealing with a brand. There's always...
Generally speaking,
always an intermediary in the way, be that an agent. And again, we've worked on stuff at no minute's notice because somebody else didn't do a particularly good job, shall we say.
Yep.
And the campaign deadline had been set by the actual brand. And it's like, well, we've got 48 hours to do this. Can you do it? And you're like, what do you reckon? I'm like, all right, let's get some coffee on, Scott.
we've done all night in the studio for that. I mean, there was a big campaign we shot years ago where it still went out under the original photographer's name because they were so well known. That they couldn't be any bad. Hang on, think about what I'm saying before I say it here so I don't give anything away. So somebody with a really big name messed up a campaign and we were brought in as the fix it. And we were here for 3 days, overnight and everything. And we won't mention the genre or anything like that, but we shot this and it still went out under this famous photographer's name and we got paid bank. It was a good payday.
Yeah, I think I went 72 hours without sleep.
Yeah, I sold the rights to everything, like, and I signed these NDAs, which basically meant I could never. We deleted the files after the shoot, so no one's ever going to see that. And do you know what? There was a phase when I was rep by Graham in probably 2016, 2019 area before I went to LPA, before I went to BA, and I was doing a lot of fix it shoots. I was like the reshoot guy who's like, yeah, don't worry about it. I won't say a word. And no one's going to know. Don't do that anymore, sadly. I wonder if anyone's had to fix one of my shoots without me knowing. That's embarrassing, isn't it? But yeah.
I've not, I mean, again, you wouldn't know, would you? So.
No, I guess not. I guess not.
I'm going to guess no.
I don't think so. Well, what can you do?
Yeah.
So now let's touch on the very even more touchy subject. I made a video this week about the tariffs in America. Now, I did not know, as an Englishman, that you cannot mention Donald Trump online without getting a tirade of hate.
You've just done it.
I know. I had, like, in the UK, you could mention Rishi Sunak or Keir Starmer.
Liz Truss.
Like, it's everyone's fair game. Like, over here, we just hate politicians.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter whether the party voted in or not, you probably still hate them. And everyone's quite civil about it, I think. Well, at least, anyway, I was not expecting the response I got having mentioned Donald Trump. The general, right, most people, lovely. And what I wanted to do, what I think I achieved for the most part, was going, here's how it seems from where we are. Here's what I think is going to happen. Let me know your thoughts and where you're from. Now, people in America from both sides of the fence very nicely put their points across. For the most part, there was a lot of like, well, do you know what? We want this to happen. This is why he's doing it. This is why we voted for him. This is what we believe he's doing. We think it's good. Other people going, this is a nightmare. We didn't want him in power. This is what we think is happening. It's bad. Mm-hmm. So that's great. The other type of comment was basically, shut up. You don't know anything. You shouldn't be allowed to talk about this. You're English. You shouldn't talk about this. You're stupid. You shouldn't talk about this. You don't know what you're talking about. You know nothing about economics. Now, I have 4 businesses that make good money. One happens to be an import-export business linking to China. One happens to be with physical product. One happens to be a digital product. One happens to be myself. And another one happens to be an artisan handmade product. All of these do very well. All of them have different things. I have managed to make all of these businesses work through various things. And I have to be very wary of what's going on. If I was in America today, my import-export business closes today. If I'd have just ordered £10,000 worth of produce and I needed to get it into the country and I've already paid the £10,000, I've got to stump up another £12,450.
More than that now, is it 145% now?
Yeah, so 12, yeah, 12, yeah, so...
It's a lot, let's
yeah, put it that way. Now, someone's going, it's negotiating tactics. Great, that doesn't help me. It might be a negotiating tactic, my business is done.
Yeah, but in the interim...
Yeah. Now, of course, there's always casualties for the greater good. I understand that. And some people, here's my thing. I don't care which side of the political spectrum you sit on. If you're a nice person, if you're a good person, I like you. I've got family members on both sides. I've got friends on both sides. You know, I have friends who are on the right, friends who are on the left. Now, of course, you go too far to the left, and you're probably not a nice person in your actions. You go too far to the right.
Well, you become what is it? Just stop oil and you deface Stonehenge.
Yeah, I've got no time for that whatsoever, that behaviour. That behaviour makes you a bad person.
Yes,
and likewise with the other direction. It makes you, but do you know what? There's good and bad in everybody. I am probably moderate left. I've done some bad things. I've got friends who are moderate right. They've done some bad things.
Not politically, but yeah.
No, yeah, yeah. But like, and we've done good things. Like, everyone's welcome in our community as long as you're... Is it same with religious people? I'm an atheist. Are you?
Well,
atheist
I'm,
or...?
I'm now atheist, being raised an RC, especially being left-handed RC at school.
Yeah.
and being forced to write in my right hand because, that's the work of the devil.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
So, again, I understand...
I'm an atheist. One of my friends is a priest, actually. Mm-hmm. You might not know him, but I'll introduce you to him if you don't. He's a musician as well. Like, he's a good guy. I've heard of priests who have been very bad people. Like, it doesn't, you know.
Yeah, but that works actually two ways. I mean, I remember, again, I say raised RC and I was an altar boy and all the rest of
it.
Not molested once. Now, that gave me deep-seated insecurities. I'm like, am I not attractive? What's wrong with me? it took years of therapy to get over that, honestly. we'll have to cut this bit out. But
no, but this is a great example of like British humour and openness. Like, we can make a joke about that and nobody's going to be offended here. I don't know whether that's...
a Catholic priest, but...
No, but I know priests who wouldn't be offended by those jokes. Like, you've got to laugh at yourself, haven't you? Anyway... I was not quite prepared for the tirade of abuse and people telling me what I can and can't talk about on my YouTube channel.
Yeah, but that's, again, dare I say it, like, I mean, I hate to use the phrase because it's overly used, but cancel culture.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't agree with my opinion, I found your content, therefore you're wrong. It's like,
pretty much. Now, this wasn't all people that disagreed with me.
No.
The majority of people who disagreed with me went, look, this is what, and it was really interesting because obviously we don't know what other people think in different countries on different political spectrums.
But it's also generally speaking true that people in other countries have a better read on your country's situation because their media isn't biased to your country.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And let's face it, American journalism is as polar as their politics are. You're either either full Newsmax, or you're MSNBC, and there isn't much in between. There isn't much that kind of straddles the line. Now, we're allegedly more neutral, but we're not.
Well, like, most of the papers
if you look
are
at the
right
Beeb, and again, a lot of the papers are one way or the other. But we're just the pendulum doesn't swing quite as far as it does across the pond.
No, I say that's fair. I don't know. I found it interesting that people were like, you can't discuss politics on your channel. It's a photography channel. So there's two things to this. One is I will discuss what I like, and these are just my opinions. I could well be. I hope I'm wrong. Like, because if I am right, it's bad. And everyone's like, well, it doesn't affect you. You're in England. If prices go up in America, what we've learned in the UK is everyone here goes, let's put the prices up. Americans are taking it. I bet our people will take it
too. Well, I've always said the UK is, generally speaking, one election behind America.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And look at Bojo.
I mean, I'll rest my case. Without Trump 2020, there would not have been Boris.
Yes. And again, in this country, half the country love him, half the country hate him.
Good or bad, but that's the reality.
My thing is, I disliked him. I think he was a very unscrupulous man. But if you like him, I don't dislike you because of that. If you're a good person and you like him, I fight for your right to have a different opinion to me.
Yes. I mean, because that's how the world should work.
Yes.
Like, may not always agree. And again, you can't be invested in something like politics only when your side is winning.
Exactly.
You know, you have to accept sometimes, again, the pendulum swings.
It does. And you know what? Whether the party wants in power or not, you'll still be unhappy about it because they won't do it exactly how you want it to be done. Which has been my learning over the years, having voted actually on both sides of the fence throughout my life. Mm. But there's two things here. One is I will discuss politics if I want to on my channel. And two is they are deeply relevant to photography for two reasons. So one...
Global economy is the big one, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Can you just check the drive on that main camera's not filling up because my eyesight's not good
yes.
enough here? Bear with us for this short break. All good on those? Yeah.
Back in the room.
Nice one.
Good spot, by the way.
That's right. I just suddenly saw it, like, looked really red from here.
God, it's red to think the size of that file.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. A terabyte.
Yeah, that's going to be a... Well, because... Yeah. Right, I think we're back in
yes.
the game.
So, why politics are relevant to photography? Two reasons. One is, I work globally. Now, I'm going to be careful with what I say here. When I market myself to America, which we have a lot of clients in, you better believe I don't use my Spanish surname. And I tried it originally and it didn't work. So I use my mother's maiden name of Smith.
The most British name
yes.
ever.
Scott Smith. That's the name I use. Now, obviously, it wants to come to my website and everything, but like trying to open an e, like, just is. Like, I don't use my Spanish surname outside of the UK. And even in the UK years ago, I wouldn't have been able to use it. My dad, whose name was Manuel, had to change his name to Jason in order to get jobs in the UK. Mm. So, you know, that's how we lived in a Combat 18 area in the late 80s, early 90s. It was not a time to be not white British. You know, so...
I remember, I'm Irish by birth.
Yeah, exactly.
And I remember being at school and they were like, "Oi, Gurney, Can your dad stop blowing up the country, please?" I'm like, "Mate, my dad's building M1. Go away." Yeah. We're blowing up nothing, Rich.
So, and again, this is not everybody has a problem with my surname, but statistically...
There's a certain audience that did.
When we look at the open rate, when we use different names, and we tested this for a while before committing to having all these different bits set up, it made a difference. Mm. And it does in other countries as well. There's certain countries where a Spanish surname is not a good thing. I hope Bav doesn't mind me mentioning this. Bav Esch used to do retouching for us. He's got a job now. And he was trying to pitch for retouching jobs. In the UK, there is a whole load of Indian outsourcing retouching companies. And Bav's name didn't help him get work.
No, because they assume he's one of the almost like call center factories in,
yeah, exactly.
in India.
Exactly. And just, I mean, obviously, once you see his work and open the email, it's fine, but you've got to open the email. And, you know, you've like...
What was it? The phrase you use a lot? The bar to entry?
Bar to entry, yeah. So, yeah, politics matter in photography. The second thing is, I can't remember the guy's name now. I'll come to you in a bit. I was mentioning all the American brands of lighting. Like, Paul C. Buff is made by, is it Jinbei or something like that? Now, it says made in America on the kit. So your Alien Bees and everything, they're made in China. Bowens, made in England, literally printed on everything, made in China. Yeah. I don't quite understand how they legally get around this.
I can tell you that. That's easy, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's what we call SKD or semi-knockdown.
Right.
Right. So they buy the bits and do some basic assembly in England, and then they can say made in England.
How much assembly is needed?
I believe it's something in the region of 17%.
Right. So Rob actually works for a company that brings stuff in from China and does that?
Yeah.
Do they do that? Yeah. And you know like all the big brands of lighting, you know, like your Profoto, Broncolor. Where do you think those circuit boards come from?
Well, this is the whole, I mean, a slight tangent, but electric vehicles.
Yeah.
Right. The whole Europe decided to push to a certain thing, like no petrol or diesel cars made by 2030.
Yeah.
Right. You've single-handedly destroyed the European car manufacturing, because where do you think all of this stuff is made?
Yeah.
Like on a different almost tangent, but it's the same kind of principle. Like a friend of mine, Mr. Mark Godfrey, who, as you know, is an actual rocket scientist.
Yeah.
We've spoken about him before.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the most intelligent and incredibly clever people I've ever met in my life. Like my brother Graham is very, very clever. And I remember what the one birthday party he ever came to, he spoke to Mark and he was like, "Bloke's a bit clever, isn't he?"
Yeah. A bit
lot smart. For Graham to say that is like an absolute accolade. So he was Mark was hired by the UK government after his time at Rolls-Royce Aerospace and all these other things to do a viability study on a multi-billion-pound offshore wind farm project.
Yeah.
And he came back after a year and they said, right, so with this allocated budget, what as a percentage, what can we spend in the UK? He said, oh, good, 2 or 3%. And they're like, what do you mean? So, well, you're either going to Germany or Holland for this stuff or China. And that's it.
Yeah.
Right, okay, go out for another year. With the right investment, what could we get that number up to? Came back, well, good 4 or 5%. Says, we don't make anything over here anymore.
Yeah.
And then they scrapped it. So, like...
And the thing is, I understand the other side of the fence where they're like, yeah, but we want to be making stuff here again. Now, personally, I don't want to be making iPhones by myself, sat there doing this all day. That's not for me. But I understand that, you know, we have people in the UK, we want the coal mines back. I don't want the coal mines back. Right. But if they want it back, that's cool. Like, right, so I want to go down a coal
anybody
mine.
Anybody with black lung does not want the coal mines back again. Right, I think, and again, like I understand it, you know, the industry, and again, the problem you've got with places, you know, especially up north and particularly Wales,
yeah,
that was their industry because obviously they were resource rich at the time. And I understand, you know, how it decimated entire regions.
So my one of my good friends, Matt, was we went out for after graduation and I remember him coming up to me and was like, "Scott, when my granddad says why we're here for dinner, we're celebrating my job in the mines." And he's just got like some biomedical like degree. I was like, "Why?" He went, "If he finds out I've gone to university, he'll be devastated." So we had to pretend this old guy. Yeah, yeah.
You know, you send the canary down and then you go digging for a bit. Yeah. You know, that was a thing. Like,
and do you know what? I've never had to face an industry disappearing. It's gutting. I can fully see that.
I'm going to argue a counterpoint to that, in that this industry isn't going anywhere. Advertising is becoming more and more prevalent. Now, it's changing.
Oh, it is 100%, changing.
And you know, move with the times or wait for the comet.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
And that dinosaur syndrome, but you know, this is a relatively, I think, future-proofed industry. Now, whether that's done by AI or bots or whatever in the future, yeah, that's a whole other story.
Exist, yeah.
But advertising will 100% go nowhere anytime soon.
Yeah, but I mean, so, and I think, like you've just mentioned here with the advertising thing, if we don't acknowledge political stuff and economic stuff on this channel, then we're missing a major part of the picture.
I mean, on previous podcasts, two spring to mind. One, the Nissan campaign with the six fingers, which was done by AI and not well, I think it's fair to say. And then also, now, to put it in the zeitgeist, but Jaguar's campaign.
Yeah, you've not heard much from them recently, have we?
It's kind of a reason for that.
They've gone low key.
Yeah, they're kind of backed off the mic a bit,
hunkering down.
But again, it's Eric Bischoff. I know you're not a wrestling fan, but I was like that generation. Eric Bischoff, who used to be the chairman of WCW, wrote a book called "Controversy Creates Cash."
Yeah,
and I think that's what Jaguar did.
Yeah, quite possibly,
because nobody wants to buy the car that they showed. But it doesn't matter because everyone's talking about Jaguar for the first time in many years.
This is true. No, there's no such thing as bad publicity, I suppose. But yeah, so to circle back round to why we do discuss politics on here, we're not saying, like, I would never push my political agenda on anybody. Rob was quite shocked earlier that I mentioned to him that I feel that I'm more left-leaning than he is. Because I really don't discuss my political opinions at all.
I think I just get more triggered than you do. I think it's probably what it is.
I think I just keep my mouth shut a lot of the time. I don't mention things. But I think discussing what may be happening in the future is important in our industry, as the majority of people were happy with, mm-hmm. on both sides of the fence, where they believe like it's a a tactic, whether it's bringing industry back to here, it's a negotiation plan, whatever it is. Don't care. Like, whatever you want to think and however you feel, I am happy with that. I am happy with you having any opinions as long as you're a nice person. And I hope that people take us in the same way. I mean,
again, obviously being of the British persuasion.
Yes.
Like, we've all been to those parties where you've been, and again, everyone gravitates to the kitchen because that's where all the booze is.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's in the kitchen.
And a discussion will pop up and there will be that one guy.
Yeah.
And you would hope you can have a reasoned discussion with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you may not agree, but at least, you know, you can speak, feel heard, and then you can shut your own mouth and listen.
Exactly. And that's what I was doing in the comments. I was listening. I read the comments, and I don't need to hear comments that think the same as me, because I need to hear comments that don't think the same as me. But I think, shut up, don't discuss politics or economics, you're not qualified. I mean, I'm pretty qualified in economics. I've managed to make a substantial stack of cash.
Yeah. And, you know, you feathered your nest.
In four different business models.
But again, nobody has the right to tell you that.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, so if someone says, like, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about, you can't talk about this, who are you to say that to me?
Exactly.
You know, it's like, you know, respect each other's opinions.
But I also don't think that I know everything, which is important. No, and I definitely don't. I tell people what I believe to be happening.
Yeah.
And what I think is going to happen, and how I'm prepared. Like, I've made changes based on what's happened in America last week. And we'll go into that. We're about to buy some new kit.
Yeah,
There's been changes made. And anyway, we won't dwell on this for too long, but basically, it's going to have a major impact. There's probably going to be a global recession. That's going to affect our industry. It's going to affect our businesses. And if you're American, it's going to affect the price of camera gear. And if you're anywhere else in the world, it's all going to go up anyway, because it always does. And once it goes up, it never comes down.
Funny that. It's like, I mean, before the world ended in 2020.
Yeah.
I mean, we're expensive over here, but the average price of a litre of petrol was $1.19.
Yeah.
Never going to see that again. Never.
No. What was I paying the other day? I mean, I put premium in mine, to be fair.
Yeah, fancy though.
It's because it's got a turbo. It doesn't like the lower. Put 99 octane in mine.
You're roughly about 140 as a national average at the minute.
I think like 144 is the most common like base level price I see.
So again, where's that 21p gone?
Yeah, definitely
in somebody's pocket.
Someone's got it.
Yeah.
It's not me. And again, like, whilst prices go up again, I'm still unable to change my day rate.
You did a video on this recently, didn't you?
I did.
You did.
My day rate's the same. My overheads are higher in this particular industry. In other companies I have, that's not been the case. I have been able to change it. So it's not a across the globe thing. We've been able to increase prices elsewhere in different businesses. But not here.
Yeah,
isn't happening.
And that's the reality.
Yeah.
It's like pubs will keep putting the price of beer up, and what are you can do, not have a beer? No.
Exactly. I think this all links nicely into the last four points, which are camera upgrades, lighting upgrades, the fact that I'm not shooting stills anymore, and that video update you want to talk about. I'll remind you if you forgot about it from last week. So how are we on exposure on that main camera over there? Are we hot? Is it best to leave it naturally? We don't want a sudden jump, do we, in exposure, really?
What should
I jump? Yes, it looks bright.
There we go. That screen always looks bright. It's a shit screen. It's a shimbal.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't have the dynamic. See, that is a nice screen, actually, the port keys one.
Yeah, yeah. It does look good. I need a better screen. So, I've not photographed stills for money since... When was the last stills campaign we did? I can't think.
Right, I think you should preface with only stills.
No, stills for money. When did I last shoot a still image for money?
No, but hasn't it been a case of it's been stills and video as a job, stills only?
This year I've not done a single stills image for money. When was the last stills
image? Most of the time I only get to see the video editing bit.
Yeah, yeah. When was the last time I did stills? I don't know. I've only shot video campaigns this year.
Did I say, I mean, at least the last thing I retouched was waffles.
Yeah, that was summer last year, wasn't it? So I hadn't even realised this. And that was GIFs.
Again, there was moving picture bolt on, but it was all from stills.
It wasn't from stills.
Nothing shot with a video camera.
So I've not shot stills yet this year. Now, I'm shooting a stills campaign next week, which is stills and video. Not animated, but like proper video and stills. But everything I've shot so far this year has been, and back end of last year, has been video only. I don't have the word videographer on my website anywhere, but that is what I'm getting booked to do.
But it's kind of assumed that you do it now.
Yeah, I think this is slightly like dumb luck that I've only, like, we have been put forward for stills jobs, we've just not won them. But we have won every video job. And I would not say I'm a good videographer.
You are a good director, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm good at directing, to be fair. So, I don't know how actually DOP, but I do direct well. And here's the interesting bit. The reason I'm winning these jobs is because of my lighting.
Yeah.
So traditionally, DOPs and lighting guys are not as good at lighting as photographers. And I am now bought in because I can light a video like a still.
Yeah. They like the look. They like the aesthetics. So I want that, but with the thing moving in it.
Yeah, yeah. And because we've shot a lot of video in our portfolio, like short 6-second clips, that's what we're doing. So we've been shooting a lot of video, a lot. And I hadn't really realized, because obviously we still do test shoots all the time. And test shoots are always stills and videos for me. I do both. Stills and videos for every test shoot. Mm-hmm. And I love test shooting. It's my favorite part of any of my jobs, actually.
I mean, this is a lesson to spend on. Again, you know, we talk about investing in yourself.
Yeah, I spend thousands on test shoots. Thousands. Like, I put up the cash. We do some good test shoots.
That's the reason I'm here. So. Yeah. Let's be honest.
And, but yeah, so that's an interesting development. I was about to buy some Fuji GFX lenses for the Fuji camera, which we've still not shot video on yet. I don't actually know how to. We should probably look into that, see if it's any good. I assume it's not going to be as good as the Blackmagic.
It's different.
Yeah. But we've been shooting on the Blackmagic 6K, the crop sensor.
Although, you know, should they come on board as a sponsor, Fuji are launching a new cinema camera.
I have seen that, which it might actually be interesting really nice to go full Fuji.
Or if Blackmagic are listening, Pixie 12K.
Yeah.
Mr. Grant Petty, the thunder from down under, if you're listening, bro.
Yeah, send us one up.
I'm all about it.
But see, that 6K camera has been being ragged. Absolutely ragged.
Not as much as my 4Ks, I'll argue.
No. But like, I mean, for me,
they put in work.
They put in a lot of work. And we've had a couple of glitches on the 6K. One is that when shooting 50 frames a second, it's, if you're doing it for too long, too often, you have to leave it to chill out.
Yeah, I mean, which is why I've always maintained that actually the smart money is on the 4Ks.
Yeah.
One, file size, as you well know.
Ooh. We shot 2 terabytes in a day.
You can record at the highest quality and not max out the data bus.
Yeah.
You can actually continuously do it, whereas the 6K cannot, to an SSD at least, record full quality on a continuous basis.
You can't do 120 frames a second at 3:1.
No. You can to CF Express.
Yeah, but they're expensive.
They're expensive, yo. And no one uses those, let's be honest.
But we were doing 5:1, 50 frames a second, and after a few, like, we're doing 2 minutes at a time, after a few takes, it would only record for a few seconds and then be like, oh, the bottleneck.
Yeah, but that happened with the R5 Canon.
Yeah, it happens with anything.
Do you remember that? And people were putting heat sinks and all sorts to find out it's actually firmware limited.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we need to protect the cinema line, so we can't have this do the thing, even though it can do
exactly
the thing.
So we were having this conversation on set, the star site, can we just record the test one? Because if they sign it off, I was like, no. We can only record when we're definitely ready and we definitely know sign-off's okay, because the cameras are just cutting out. And there was a few issues in this one ad campaign we were shooting. The turntable was really slow that we were shooting a spinning drink on. And it was like a 2-minute take to get one spin.
The one revolution, yeah.
Yeah, 2 minutes. And I was like, we cannot film anything unless we're certain it's going to be signed off, because we're hitting this bottleneck. We had that issue. We then overheated the camera on a different job, because we were recording standard frame rate, but we're literally filming all day. The camera overheated.
I mean, again, I am a fanboy of Blackmagic. So, you know, I'm going to caveat what I'm about to say with that. That's all of those things are correct. Now, as you know, I have two.
Yep.
They're both broken, but slightly in different ways. So, you know, I mean, think of it as like, a child. That's, you know, unique in its own way, but ever so slightly off the norm. And that's what these are. I love them both for it. But however, like in the broadness of things, they're amazing. Now, I know people, obviously being more, I guess, cinematography based in himself. I remember a friend of mine, for the longest time, his goal was to have a red. Like a not a Komodo, like an actual proper red. Quote unquote, the biggest mistake I made in my life was buying that. Now Red is owned by Nikon or Nikon, depending which side of the pond you're from. That may change. But my God, like he turned up on set and I remember working on an advert with him. I was brought in as the DOP and we were using his Red. And we spent most of the time trying to get the thing to turn on and work and record a frame.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, I've got my Black Magics in the car, mate. Do you want me to bust them out so we can just get this job done?
I mean, like...
And then that was a 30 grand camera, just for context. So the niggles you have with a two grand camera, you cannot complain.
I mean, the image quality was beautiful. We shot on the Zeiss lenses. So
I've seen the BTS, Yeah.
So I've got two lenses I use in my Blackmagic. One is the 18-35, which we're using now for YouTube. And if it's not YouTube, we're using the 100mm Zeiss. I shoot everything on the 100mm because the sort of stuff I shoot. No, that's not true. We do use the 18-35 sometimes. But majority of that Zeiss Milvus is beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I run typically, as you know, I run two rigs, you know, one mobile, one static.
Yeah.
And the choice of having two cameras is you can basically leave them as they are. But the... I run the 18-35 and the 50-100 Sigma Art, both f1.8, which with the speed boosters is f1.2. So you've got an 18-35 f1.2, a 50-100 f1.2. What more do you need?
Exactly.
And these are actually great lenses. And probably
the Sigma ones are banging.
Colors and matching everything.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't know which is which, other than the shallow depth of field you get with the 50-100 is insane.
Yes.
I love that lens.
Yeah.
Does have problems. The focus breathing on that lens is shockingly bad.
I can imagine.
The 18-35 is, and again, we talk about DxO from time to time, and you shouldn't put too much weight in it, but it's an anomaly lens. It shouldn't exist. It's sharp as any prime you could find, at least on a video camera. Again, people will prove me wrong on stills, but on a video camera, I guarantee you will not find a sharper lens in that 18-35.
Yep.
Now, also, it has no focus breathing.
Yep. And mine has slight focus breathing.
And my personal favourite thing, it's completely parafocal.
Yes.
And now the 50-100 has none of those traits. Now, it's tack sharp when you've got it in. It focus breathes like a bad man. And parafocal, this is not. I can say that with absolute certainty.
I mean, so my Zeiss Milvus lens, the downside to that is it focuses by the lens protruding out. Mm. And this shouldn't be an issue, but I don't like the aesthetic of that.
No, because it's always seen as a cheaper lens.
Yeah, and that lens is not cheap.
No.
But the image quality is insane. And same with, like you say, that 18-35 Sigma lens. I mean, I've never had any issues with the image quality from that. It looks brilliant. But we did have issues with it. The producer was like, what's going on? Is your camera broken? I was like, the camera's not broken. It's just we're shooting beyond the... And you know, well, do we need to get a different camera in? I was like, there is no other camera within the budget of this campaign that we can use. Because you're looking at spending tens of thousands on rental just for the camera. Yeah. And then you need...
I mean, of course, get an Arri LF and you've got no issue, but...
The budget wasn't there for that. And also, it was last minute. There was a short turnaround. And, but we've done great stuff on this camera. So what we do need to buy, though, are more lights.
Yes.
So I have got two of the
Aperture
600Ds Pros. And I've got... We're currently being lit by cheaper lights. Can't remember what they're called.
Nanlight?
No.
No?
I don't know. Siru?
Oh, Suray.
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 Suray lights. They're not as good, though. They come on set, they're backup lights. I need to buy two more Aperture 600Ds.
Again, if Aperture are listening.
Yeah.
subtle hints.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
Need some more Aperture lights.
We'd love it. We'll love our sponsor.
A grand each?
Yeah. But again, you know, we talk about industry standard things earlier.
Yeah.
I think Aperture are kind of... Unless you've got the budget for Arri Sky panels, which is a different level or completely, I think Aperture's where you're at.
Yeah, absolutely. And now that we are... So here's the thing, and this is why politics are important. I was ready to go and buy two of those lights without even batting an eyelid. Now, as you all know, I am notoriously tight.
I mean, I think thrifty, I think he's...
I know, in the grand scheme of things, if I spend $3,000 on lighting bits or not, it makes no difference to my business. But I suddenly went, ooh, maybe not today, because I think if COVID taught us nothing else, it's that you never know how long things are going to be bad for.
No.
And I'm like, this could be a quick blip for a few weeks, or it could be years of financial crisis. So I didn't buy it. And it's not like it matters. Like, it's a really privileged thing to say, but spending like $3,000 makes no difference to my life in this company where I'd be buying it through.
Yeah.
Like, it's a minor percentage of what's in the bank. It doesn't matter. But I still went, no, I'm not doing it. And I've not done it. And I'm not going to do it. What I will do is, next time we get a big video campaign, I'll book it. I'll buy them just before the job. But I'm not.
So you're almost in the realms of, oh, well, the job pays for these.
Yeah, yeah. But that is not what I'm doing here. The jobs I've done over the years have already paid for them. Like, we can get those in.
I did that with my drone, remember? That was my justification for that. But
it's just, I'm just scared of spending money because the recession's on its way. And although the coffers...
And what fuels a recession, Scott? Is it people with money keeping it in the bank and not spending it in the economy?
It's people like me. I am the cause of a recession.
Forget the orange boy over the pond. It's you, isn't it, Scott? You're entirely responsible for the current situation.
People holding on to money, although I did dump a load into S&P 500. A couple of days ago, and it really tanked.
Wouldn't you?
I was like, this is a good price.
And you already made bank.
I've already made bank.
I've already
made the lights back and then some. But obviously holding on to cash is not good for the economy.
No.
But I don't have confidence in the economy. I'm not going to be left holding the bloody bag when the music stops.
No, you don't want that baby in your hands.
No, I do not. And, you know, I've been through recessions before. And do you know what? For the cost of those lights, I can live for a month. And although that's not the case now, if this goes on for years, that month could be important.
That could be the deal breaker that month.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm hanging on to the cash until things are better. And you know, again, this is why politics are important in this. And we also know that there's a load of jobs at the moment we've got coming in and they're all on hold. All on hold. Because everyone's like, oh, do we want the campaign to go live? What's the appetite like for buying based on these things that are going on?
Well, and again, everyone's waiting it out to see what's happening.
Yeah. Now, the good thing is, in a recession, advertising spending goes up.
Yeah. Like, I remember the thing we can't mention for reasons, when the world ended like 5 years. It's 5 years ago.
Yeah. We did so much work.
Yeah. But like, because again, you had a captive audience.
Yeah.
And people were dragging all. Do you remember like the Guinness shots? They were like, remember these that we did like 20 years ago?
They wanted us to shoot a Guinness campaign in my back garden, didn't they?
Yeah.
They're like, how can we legally do this? And I was like, well, here we... Cause, I mean, I was quite lucky. My girlfriend's a food stylist. We have a large house for shooting in. The kitchen's big enough to double up as a film set. And we did that a few times. We had directors in the driveway. Extension cables been flung out the front windows. Me shooting video in there and, you know, wireless monitors. We had you on the other side of the studio one day editing with like cables going through walls. And it was all very...
Technically, I was allowed to be there because as a singleton, I was at extreme risk of loneliness and was allowed to form a bubble. So.
But it was something nuts. I had to come in 2 days before each shoot to put bottles of water down and stuff. So it had enough time to be...
For the thing to...
We did well in lockdown. My girlfriend's business was insane. Like, you know, and mine was really good. There's loads of good things like business-wise. But like, it's all political. Yeah. And it's all like... But if you're working, it is economics and politics. Mm. And if you're a documentary photographer, you're doing it for the love and for the art... It's political.
Mm.
It just is. And again, just to reiterate, I don't care which side of the fence you sit on with your politics. If you're a nice person,
at least be aware of what's going on in the world.
I always think like it's really important to put yourself in other people's shoes. And I always like the word Sonder, which is the realization that everybody has a life as in-depth and as chaotic and meaningful as yours. So when he sat there, I used to sit in Shanghai, I can't remember the name of the station, or the main station. My mate was like, go to the station at rush hour, just sit down for half an hour. The thousands of people coming in and out of trains. And like, you know, the moment of Sonder when you go, all of these people have worlds as insane as mine.
Hmm.
And like the bandwidth you need to like see all that many people having that is insane. But yeah, so lighting upgrades on hold. Camera upgrades, the Fuji lenses I was about to pull the plug on hold.
On hold.
And I know that prices are going to go up for those things.
And again, 6K, perfectly good enough.
Perfectly good enough. And yeah, I mean, hopefully the 6K gets an update because the full frame one did.
Ah.
Or has it? What's going on?
Well, I mean, again, there's a bit of a, just to wind up the industry, because again, I mean, one of the things I love about Blackmagic is that they are, let's face it, an industry disruptor.
Yep.
Now, it's the 6K full frame.
Yep.
I don't believe that upgrade will ever be pushed down to the series pockets because the sensor doesn't have the ability to do dual pixel autofocus.
Got it.
They're trialing it there before they push it into the Pixis and the Ursa and all these, you know, the 12K at least and so on. So I don't believe that, because again, they're still doing upgrades for these.
I know, they're a good company like that.
Like, they were like, well, the hardware can do it, so let's go. You know, unlike Canon, which would be, well, you got to buy the new one, obviously, if you want that one particular feature
even when
that we
it's
just
launched.
Even though the previous one was completely capable of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, remember Magic Lantern?
Yeah.
Like, again, great guys, enthusiasts were like, well, the camera can do it.
Yeah.
And Canon, but that would impact on our cinema line. We can't let you do that.
Yeah.
Whereas Blackmagic literally don't seem to care. I mean, they're probably still releasing updates for the pocket, the original OG.
Yeah. I mean, so one of the issues I have, so I don't need autofocus at all for commercial work. No one uses autofocus. That's why we have these wireless focusing machines.
Someone once said to me, the camera doesn't know where to focus for the story.
Exactly. Autofocus is one of those things that you don't use in video. But for YouTube, I have an issue that I set myself up, I focus the camera, and then I move. And I'd say 75% of my YouTube videos, I'm either front or back focused. And there's nothing I can do about it.
No. I mean, there is a time and a place for autofocus. Absolutely.
So do I buy a 6K full frame and get that update?
I mean, if should one of these break, that's probably where I would replace it with one of those.
But I'd need a new lens because that's a crop sensor lens.
Yeah. But that's the next issue. It's because that lens doesn't exist on a full frame. I mean, you can window it, but, you know, shoot Super 35 mode, but then what have you really gained?
Exactly. So yeah, I'd
just
probably
for that
end
one feature.
Buying, a 24mm lens?
Well, again, yeah. I mean, again, obviously on...
So what, £500 secondhand?
On that camera.
Yeah.
You know, and again...
£500 secondhand, about 500?
About that. I mean,
how much is a 6K? £2,000?
But, about 2.5 new, but again, they're probably out in the... In the guy, and again, you do have the benefit of two XLR sockets for the audio. So
that's good.
So that's an upgrade.
Yeah, maybe we buy one of those, £2,500 all in. We'll probably get a lens and a camera for that kind of thing.
And again, bigger sensors always better. I know people are going to hate.
Bigger sensors are better. Every time I mention this, someone's like, "Oh, I did great with the Micro Four Thirds." I'm like, "It'd be better on an 8x10."
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there's practicalities in bringing an 8x10 out, but like,
yeah.
The biggest sensor you can physically lug around is the one you should be using, is my my take on this.
Which I mean, the new Blackmagic Pixis, as you know, we've just had NAB.
Yeah.
And they've launched the Pixis 12K, which is the same sensor in the Ursa LF.
Yeah.
Now, because of the batteries they use, etc., you don't get all of the fancy frame rates that you do with the Ursa, but that was like an $8,000-$9,000 camera. This thing's like $5,000. Now, sorry to the rest of the industry, but mate, no.
Well, should I be getting one of those? If they get the autofocus, it could be YouTube and commercial.
100%, they will come to that camera. 100%. They're doing the. We'll put it on the 6K full frame. Do that for a year. Get all the kinks worked out, and then drop it straight into these.
Because one of the like strange things that you don't think about until it's too late with camera gear is, so I've got my Fuji system, and it runs Fuji batteries.
Mm-hmm.
I've got my Canon system. It runs Canon batteries. I've got my video system. It runs Sony
MPFs
and DTAP. So I've got 10 V-mount DTAP batteries. I've got 15 or 16 Sony batteries. I've got 20 Canon batteries. I've got 10 Fuji batteries. It's a nightmare. So now what I've done is my Fuji camera, if I'm not shooting stills, it's not shooting portraits, if it's on there, it runs off the Sony batteries as well. So dummy to Sony. It's just, it's so annoying. Like on the job last week, I took an entire case of batteries. When I say case, but I mean like an entire Think Tank airport bag just of batteries, which weighed a ton, I must add. And I was a bit worried about them catching fire in the sun.
Well, it's the ritual, like the days, not day, days.
Oh, we're still charging.
I need to get all these charged, so you roll up and everything's, you know.
I remember back in the wedding days, I haven't set an alarm for 3 a.m. between two wedding jobs.
Just swap the batteries over to get the next slot in, yeah.
And then you're constantly got like a multi-socket with like 10 chargers attached, trying to plug it in anywhere in the location. Yeah. But yeah, like, you know, these, you can have as many chargers as you want. Then the limiting factor is plug sockets. So I've got an entire trolley over there of chargers. I can charge, currently doing 2 DTAP, 6 NPFs and 4 Canon and 4 Fuji batteries at any given time and 16 AA's. Now, I could obviously buy more DTAP chargers, but I need more plug sockets. I've probably got a few spare plugs. And they take so long to charge.
Yeah, I mean, again, some faster than, especially now we've got, you know, sort of, you know, PD chargers on tossing, all that.
Oh, then you've got the power banks. So I've got 6 power banks on the go at any given time.
Yeah.
And then 2 phones. 2 iPads. You're like, it's just charging. It's just a heinous task. And it's expensive because electric here is not cheap.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, we've got chargers running all the time, different batteries. It would be great just to have one battery to run. I mean, we're always going to have DTAP and NPF. But it'd be great just to be like, if we could go all Fuji, get rid of DTAP, and it's just NPF and Fuji.
Yeah, but in fairness, the V-mounts lasts so long, like you just, it's the charge it and forget it for a weekend, it'll just get you through.
Yeah, but still we need 10 because we do one shoot, we come back, plug them into charge at the studio, so we use 2 batteries in a day probably because we don't let it go flat. We get to close and then change it.
Yeah.
And then we go to the next shoot, use 2. And then we do a day on a podcast, use 3. And, you know, stuff like the stuff we filmed today. Then we go do another shoot, have some behind the scenes video. That's, you know, and before you know it, you've got like 8 of them queued up to be charged. You've got to be there to physically swap the charger.
Yeah.
And again, yes, I could buy more chargers, but then I need to have more plug sockets fitted.
And again, you get like multi ones, but they're so expensive.
I know. I can't face buying expensive.
It's a hard thing, because especially with batteries, because you can spend £1,000 on batteries and chargers, £2,000 even, easy.
Yep.
How much better is your work for that £2,000 spend?
Oh, zero.
Zero.
But
it's the most. Now, you buy like a new lens or a new camera body or something, lighting modifiers, whatever. All of that has an impact on the quality of your work.
No, exactly.
This just, it's just, you can just shoot for days and
I reckon I took over £2,000 worth of batteries on a job last week.
Yeah, sounds about
because
right.
Because we also didn't know if we're going to have to power the lights via DTAP.
Yeah.
Because although we had a huge studio, we had a lot of kit and we didn't know what the power situation was like, what the access to it was like, how close could we get to it? Because, you know, we just didn't know. I mean, it turns out it was a useful
studio.
Well, you
know, I'm a big fan of, you know, unplugged.
Oh, I mean, also,
I assume that nothing is going to be there.
Yes.
So I have to be able to run whatever I need to do for the day on the batteries.
Yeah. I mean, this studio was shooting it. There were 6 shoots going on the same day. Like, I didn't know what the situation was going to be like. It could have been anything. So we took batteries because of that. And also, there's a health and safety person who walks around all day going, you can't put that cable there. And if you've already set the lights up there, then you've got to battery power that bad boy. So yeah, you know, I don't know. I can't remember how we got onto this topic now, but batteries anger me. Yeah, buying new cameras.
Because it's such an unglamorous purchase.
It really is. It is nothing sexy.
That's probably
about
the best
battery.
Word I can use for it, really.
It's like buying hard drives, isn't it? It pains me.
Yeah.
Pains me. And again, you know, we shot 2 TB in a day.
Oh, easily.
And next week,
well, especially at 5:1 on 6K.
Yeah, 50 frames a second, decent size. And they had PCs for editing on, which meant we only had 4 GB file size, which was problematic.
Yeah, I mean, somehow they seem to get around it because they have to chop it and they have to put them together.
Yeah, but you lose a frame.
It was the drive formatted PC.
We had, yeah. So after the first take, he came back down and went, can you format these drives to PC, please? I can't get them off. And I was like, oh.
So, nerd alert, should you find yourself in that spot again, don't format them as FAT32.
Yeah.
Format them as NTFS.
I can't remember what we did, to be honest. Someone else did it for me.
NTFS doesn't have a file limit. It's kind of the Mac OS journaled version of Windows.
Right, yeah.
Nerds, sorry, my bad.
So we just did as we were told.
Single, honestly.
Yeah. slide into Rob's DMs if you're looking for a nerdy boyfriend.
Yeah. You know. but that's, you know, they talk about the empty in the kitchen thing again. It's so that's how you do that. The problem is that can't be then read by anything. Anyway. Yeah.
There we go. What can you do?
Bit of free advice for Windows users there.
Yeah. But I think we've covered everything this week. We'll be back next week with more.
We are, in fact, back next Saturday.
Yeah, we are back.
Now, whether this all is delivered in that format, we don't know. But
yeah, I think so. I think this will probably go out on Monday. Saturday today goes out Monday. You know, get that podcast world rolling. Got new intros.
Well, you know, season three, we did make the new intro last week, so that was
all ready to go. So yeah, I think we'll leave it there. We've covered everything. Everyone, please be nice in the comments. Be respectful and just let's all get on.
If it can't be anything, just be kind.
Yeah, let's all be kind.
It's goodbye from me.
See you later. Bye bye.
Adios.